improve our self-esteem by the simple act of pleasuring our bodies. Toys for everybody. Don't forget, grown-ups play with toys. A huge variety of excellent sex toys is available. While these can be purchased online if you're shy, we strongly recommend a visit to one of the hundreds of excellent erotic boutiques modeled on San Francisco's classic Good Vibrations that have sprung up in large and small cities all over the United States. Such stores allow you to shop in a welcoming, safe, and remarkably unsleazy environment with helpful staff who are knowledgeable about the mysterious devices on the shelves. Dasa used to sell toys at pleasure parties, which are Tupperware parties for sex toys, usually run by a sex educator invited in for the occasion, a great idea for a bachelorette party. If you've never tried a vibrator, it's never too late. Battery-operated vibrators are less powerful than the plug-in and rechargeable kinds, so try to find an opportunity to check out all kinds. They work through clothes, so it's not really that hard to find a way to experiment. They're not just for women, either. Many a man has had his life changed by a vibrator against the perineum. You will find insertables in a huge variety of sizes and shapes to meet every need. Textured toys in fake fur or spiky gels, satin blindfolds and velvet restraints, and usually a thoughtful selection of good books and erotica. There is no reason why a sex store has to be hidden in a basement. Toys can add to your pleasure and make some things possible that never were before. For instance, if you're curious about anal play, it helps to start small. Vibrators have given many women an assurance about orgasm that was never before possible. Many women share sex however they want to, and if they have not had an orgasm by the time they are getting tired, curl up with their good friend and their vibrator, a surefire solution. Not having to worry about how orgasms are going to happen can take a lot of the worry out of getting close for both women and men. If you really want to be the world's greatest lover, and you want to know exactly what pleases your partner the most, try masturbating in the same room. Who knows? You might like to watch. We find it a tremendous turn-on. Watching or showing, you will teach and learn each other's individual pattern of pleasure and become the most perfect and most perfectly satisfied lovers that ever could be. Get your conditions met. It's hard to focus on pleasure when you're worrying about whether the baby is asleep, the door is locked, the shades are drawn, or whatever bothers you. Figure out what your conditions are, what you need to feel safe and free of worry, so you can enjoy your sex completely. Deal with your needs beforehand. Establish agreements with your partner about safer sex and/or birth control. It is not appropriate to argue with anyone's limits regarding pregnancy and disease risk reduction. Respect the limits of the most conservative person, because sex is a lot more fun when we all feel safe. Personal limits may be idiosyncratic, and that's okay, too. Dasi has a minor obsession about being clean and likes to set up clean sheets and have a shower so she feels all fresh and sparkly. Someone else might not care as much. So what? There is no one right way to get ready to have sex. Give yourself permission to take care of your own needs. It will free you. Sometimes you discover that your conditions aren't what you thought they were, and that the new ones might offer some special fun. Janet remembers.
I'd been to a concert that night with two friends who were lovers with each other and with me. One of us had recently acquired a treasure, a 64 Lincoln Continental, the size of a studio apartment. On the way back, we decided to stop by the river to admire the moonlight. And before we knew it, we were throwing a full-scale orgy in the front seat of the Lincoln. I'd always thought I wouldn't like sex in a car. But when I found myself stretched out in the front seat, with my head in one partner's lap, as I masturbated him over my shoulder, and my other partner kneeling in the passenger footwell with her head buried between my legs, I began to change my mind. The scene ended in hysterical giggles. The one I was masturbating began to come. His body went into an orgasmic spasm, and he hit the horn. The car emitted an enormous blast of sound from its mid-60s Detroit horn that must have awakened everybody for miles around and made us all practically fall out of our seat.
Communicate. Most of us have been struck dumb by the scariest communication task of all, asking for what we want. Is there any one of us who has never failed to tell our partner when we want our clit or cock stimulated harder or softer, slower or faster, more on the shaft or more on the tip, on the side, on both sides, up and down or round about, or whatever it is that would work for us? Take it from us, the way to get what you want in sex is to ask for it. And the way to get a good reputation as an excellent lover is to ask each partner what he or she likes and let them show you how to do it exactly right. Janet makes a point of having her lovers masturbate for her early on in the relationship so she can watch how they do it and make mental notes about what kinds of stimulation they like to feel. Once you get past the initial embarrassment, this is actually easy and will make you a very popular lover indeed. If you find this impossibly difficult, here's a good way to start.
Exercise. Yes, no, maybe. Try this exercise with yourself or with a lover with whom you are very familiar. And as you get comfortable, repeat it with each new lover. First, make a list of all the sexual activities you can think of that anyone, not just you, might like to do. You will immediately discover that this is also an exercise in developing language. So pay attention as you name these things. Are you more comfortable with intercourse or fucking? Oral sex or going down? Cocksucking or eating out? What do you call your own sex organs? Penis, dick, cock, prick? Pussy, cunt, vagina, clitoris? If you get stuck, put a little effort into finding any name that describes the activity, take a deep breath, and repeat those words 5 times, and breathe again. Make your list as complete as possible, and include activities that you don't like as well as those you do. You can get prefab lists online, but then you miss the experience of naming all these unspeakable delights. Then each of you take a separate, smaller piece of paper, and make 3 columns, yes, maybe, and no. Yes means I already know I like this. No means this act is outside my limits and I don't want to try it in the foreseeable future. Maybe means you try it if the conditions were right. The conditions might be if I feel safe enough, if I'm turned on enough, if I know it's okay to stop if it feels bad, if we go slow enough, if we have a backup plan, and so forth. Decide where every act on the big sheet fits into your limits today. Share the lists with a partner. Discuss where you fit together well and where you have differences. There are no rights and wrongs here. Think of your likes and dislikes as if they were flavors of ice cream. Notice the wealth of what you both like on your yes lists. This exercise will need to be done more than once, as your limits will change over time. You can do it to look at what you can share with any particular partner when you are sharing sex.
These are ideas about how you can start communicating explicitly about sex and negotiate consensuality. Remember, we define consent as an active collaboration for the pleasure, benefit, and well-being of all persons concerned. Consent means that everybody involved must agree to whatever activity is proposed and must also feel safe enough that they could decline if they wished. We believe that if you are not free to say no, you can't really say yes. We also think it is essential that everyone involved understands the consequences of both responses, which is another way of saying that it's not acceptable to take advantage of someone's naivete. We cannot say this often enough. You have a right to your limits, and it is totally okay to say no to any form of sex you don't like or are not comfortable with. Having a limit does not mean that you are inhibited, uptight, no fun, or a permanent victim of American Puritanism. It just means you don't like something. When you want to learn to like it, we think there are better ways to do that than to succumb to guilt-tripping, shaming, or outright bullying. Say no to what you don't want, and when you decide to try something new, arrange for lots of support from your partner, get your conditions met, and be kind to yourself. Positive reinforcement is really the best way to learn. In many areas, workshops and groups about sex are available, put on by dedicated sex educators and counselors, sometimes at birth control clinics or organizations supporting sexual health. All of these workshops are designed to be safe, to respect everyone's boundaries, and to give you an opportunity to learn new information, increase your comfort level, and speak for yourself about your own feelings and experience. What we are advocating here is communication by, with, and for everybody.
Exercise. More fun with your yes, no, maybe list. Once you've made a list, there are lots of further activities you can do with it. Put your lists up on the fridge or in the bathroom where you can see them every day. Write a possible script for your next date based entirely on items found on both of your yes lists. Write a script from the yes lists for a satisfying half-hour date you could do on a weeknight. A quickie plan. Choose an item from your maybe list and figure out what you would need to try that and how your partner could help you. What are your conditions? Choose an item from your partner's maybe list and create a fantasy of how you could seduce him into it. Tell him about the fantasy. This is not a time for pouncing and yelling, "Surprise!"
Find your turn-on. Have you ever set out to make love and discovered that you couldn't find your turn-on? There you are, hunting for that elusive state of excitement and wondering what's wrong with you when your lover does the things you usually love, and your response is just plain nothing, or, worse yet, irritation or ticklishness. Women wonder why they aren't getting wet. Men agonize over absent erections. Everybody either fakes it or gets embarrassed. It happens to everybody, really. It's not just you. For some people, losing their turn-on happens when they are nervous, maybe with a new partner or in a new situation. For others, familiarity reduces arousal, and they have a hard time grasping their desire in their relationships with the people they know the best and love the most. Getting turned on requires a physical and mental transition into a different state of consciousness. Every night, when you go to sleep, you make such a transition. You turn the lights down, get into loose clothing, lie down, perhaps read quietly or watch a little TV, deliberately changing your state of consciousness from wide awake to sleepy. Some people do this automatically, while others have to work at figuring out what helps them get to sleep. Similarly, we all need to know how we get turned on, what works for us when arousal doesn't just come of its own accord. Our mythology tells us that we are not supposed to have to do this on purpose, that we are supposed to be swept away with desire or else something is wrong. We don't really want to make love to this person, we've made a terrible mistake, and now what are we going to do with the kids? Men are told that they are supposed to be so turned on by the mere availability of a partner that their erection should stand up and salute without any actual sensory stimulation. Women are taught that they ought to be turned on in response to any stimulus from a partner they care about, and if they aren't, they are frigid or perhaps feeling hostile. These are only some of the very destructive lessons you may have learned. The first thing you need to do when desire doesn't come up like thunder is to remember that lots of serious sluts have dealt with this problem successfully, and so can you. Let's look at how we could go about deliberately getting turned on. Some people just charge on, start sexual stimulation, and keep on with it till their turn-on catches up with them, and this works for many people much of the time. Dossie once had a partner who liked to leap into cold mountain lakes when they were camping, insisting that you'd get warm eventually if you just thrashed around. Other people like to get in the water one toe at a time, warming up gradually and sensually, allowing time to appreciate the changes in sensitivity that occur as they move slowly into their sexual response cycle. For many people, simply slowing down gives them the chance to get in sync with their turn-on. And once you find your turn-on, it makes it easier to speed up. Many people experience hypersensitivity, which means feeling ticklish or jumpy or irritated, when they attempt to take in sensations that are too focused or too intense in the early part of their journey to arousal. Such ticklishness usually disappears once the person is thoroughly excited and may reappear right after orgasm. The only way to deal with hypersensitivity is to remember that very few people can get turned on while they are being tickled or irritated, so take your time. Dossie's partner, who loved to leap into cold lakes, also really liked to be tickled. That's why you gotta ask. Feel free to tell your lover about hypersensitivity and what sensations you enjoy early on and how that may be different later. Most hypersensitivity can be cured with a firm touch and a gradual approach. Start with caressing backs and shoulders and less sensitive parts of the body, making sure of serious arousal before touching the more exquisitely sensitive areas. Talk with your lover about what turns you on. A fantasy? A story? Having your fingers or toes gently bitten and sucked? Ask your lover what turns him on. Chewing on his neck, brushing his hair? You could prepare for this talk by writing down a list of all the things you know excite you, each of you on your own, and then sharing your lists. Talking can be a little risky, and risk can be exciting in and of itself. Get into your body. Sensual delights like hot tubs, bubble baths, naked skin by the warm fire, massage. These are the slower delights that give us time to focus our attention on physical pleasure and allow our busy brains to slow down or drift off into fantasy. This kind of pleasure should not be demanding. This is not the time to worry about heavy breathing or undulating hips. It is the time for entrancement. Fantasy is a big turn-on for many people, and yes, it is perfectly normal to fantasize when your partner is doing sexy things to you. Many people also like to fantasize on their own before their erotic encounters, building up a nice head of steam before any touching actually takes place. Perhaps you would both enjoy watching an erotic video or reading each other grown-up bedtime stories. Maybe it would be hot to tell each other your favorite fantasies. Although lust for one person is seldom satisfied by sex with another, experienced sluts know that turn-on is transferable. The excitement you feel about the sex you're planning with Bill next weekend can easily set a fire under your session with Jane tonight, because arousal is a physical experience that can be used for anything you want. The lust in the mind persists, and we'll still be there for you when you get around to Bill. We promise. Excitement begins with a slow, sensual warmth, and when the warm-up has begun, the door is open for more intense excitement, exploring the sensitivities of ears, necks, wrists, and toes, or tongues in mouths. Breathing becomes deeper, and hips start to move of their own accord. So does this excitement mean it's time to leap on that express train to orgasmic release? Just because your body is physically ready to enjoy sex doesn't mean you need to rush to fulfillment. Why don't you take a little more time? This feels good, right? So what about feeling good a little more? Getting a little more turned on? Remember when you were in high school and you could kiss for hours? Slow down. Don't we all want a lover with a slow hand? The most common mistake people make when they get nervous about sex is to rush things. Tension does tend to speed us up, and it is also true that both men and women develop a lot of muscle tension as they approach orgasm, which adds to the furor. Now, when we are truly ready, there is nothing we like more than to grunt and gasp and heave and shout and make fists with our toes on the speeding express train to orgasm. But there is more to sex than orgasm. So let's not leave out sensuality, seduction, the oh-so-gradual turn-on, the building of suspense, the exploration of every part of the body that can arouse the senses. We want to do it all. To explore the entire range of sensual and sexual intimacy, we need to learn techniques for slowing down. The first technique for slowing down is very simple. Take a deep breath and hold it. Put your hand on your abdomen and feel the hardness of your muscles. Then breathe out, slowly, and you will feel the muscles in your torso relax. When we are tense, we tend to breathe in gasps, gulping air in and exhaling very little. That's how we maintain tension in our muscles and in our minds. When we breathe out, we relax. So anytime you are tense in any situation, you can relax a little by taking 3 long, slow, deep breaths, making sure to breathe out as thoroughly as you breathe in. You can learn more about relaxation and slowing down by taking a class in any form of yoga, practicing sensual massage, trying tantric techniques, or just slowing down long enough to discover what fun it is to focus on what you're feeling when you're feeling good. You can reduce your nervousness when you talk about sex, and you can slow yourself down during sex just by breathing. When you slow your breathing while you are turned on, let your awareness go down into your body. Scan your whole body with your mind, starting from your toes, and let yourself notice how each part of you feels. Chances are, you will discover a lot of good feelings you haven't even felt before. Sex therapists call this sensate focus, and advocate it in particular for those who want to slow down their response and enjoy more sex before they come. You can slow down your physical sexual response by breathing, relaxing, and focusing your attention to reduce your physical tension because, you see, not only do we all tense our muscles before we come, but most of us cannot come when our muscles are relaxed. So orgasmic control is not achieved by grunting and bearing down, but rather by relaxing and enjoying yourself. Slowing down is also useful when you are trying out new activities or feeling nervous for any reason. Our friend Mandy relates one of her early learning experiences with condoms. Rob and I had been occasional lovers for many years, and we were getting together for the first time after a long hiatus. We had very little experience of safer sex at the time, but decided, due to our various experiences, that if we wanted to fuck, we should use a condom. This was all fine in theory, but when the time came to put it on after a suitable and exciting round or two of outer course, Rob picked up that difficult little piece of rubber and promptly lost his erection. I'm sure this has never happened to any of you. We fooled around for a little while and tried again, with the same response. Rob's mind and his cock were not in agreement, and his cock was not cooperating. I dragged myself up into a more active consciousness and decided to put what I had learned in adult sex education to use. I got him to lie back and agree to be done to, and I set up the environment. Candles for light carefully placed where we wouldn't knock them over, lubricant and towels handy, 2 or 3 rubbers in case we broke one, plus slow sensual music on a very long disc. I got myself in a comfortable position between his legs, comfortable because I wanted to take all the time in the world, and I did not want to be interrupted by an aching back or a cramped shoulder. I started by stroking his body, thighs, tummy, legs, very gently, in a soothing way, for a long time, till he first relaxed and then responded with an erection. I waited a little longer so he could enjoy that erection without any responsibility for taking things further. In sex therapy, this is called non-demand pleasuring. Then I moved the stroking to his genitals, around but not on his penis. His erection went down again, so I moved further back and continued sensual stroking on his skin till he got hard again. I continued a little longer, then moved to touching closer to his cock. This time his erection fell only a little and got hard again after only a few seconds. By now he was breathing hard, and so was I. For me, the experience was very sensual and kind of trance-like, warm and pleasurable, a major turn-on, too. I spent a very long time stroking around but not on his cock, until he was very hard indeed. He reached for me, but I slapped his hand. No distractions, please. I am doing this to you. Get it? When the suspense was virtually unbearable, I ran my hand lightly over his dick. He shuddered. Stroking his cock and pulling gently on his balls aroused him even more, and he was beginning to moan and sweat. I picked up the condom, checking to make sure I was unrolling it in the right direction, and he lost his erection almost instantly. I went back to stroking around, not on, his cock, and he sprang up again, getting impatient. But I made him wait, played with his dick for a long time, but gently enough that I knew he couldn't come. The next time I approached with the rubber, he only wilted a tiny bit, so I rubbed a bit more, and we went round a few times until he was so turned on he couldn't think anymore, and his cock stood up nice and straight while I rolled the rubber over it. I continued playing with him while he got used to the new sensation. By this time I was seriously turned on and more than a little impatient, so when I gave the word, he attacked and did the raging bull thing, and we both finally got to fuck fast and hard. It was well worth the waiting. I'm sure they heard the explosion in the next town. To sum up, and maybe catch our breath a little ourselves, a basic skill for good sex is knowing how to relax and slow down, and then knowing how to tense and speed up. And once you know how, you can go round and round as many times as you can bear to hold off, enjoying every minute and building up excitement for the grand finale. Relaxing your breathing and relaxing your body can help you get centered, grounded in your body, and in the pleasure you are feeling, and give you more choices about your sex life. Afterglow. Sometimes we get so fixated on the challenges of successfully steering our course through the torturous rapids of getting there that we forget to pay attention to where we have gotten. Afterglow. That dreamy, relaxed, exhausted, sweet state that follows the thrashing and shouting is a delicious time. Enjoy it. Rest in it, curled up with your partner. Forget the mess and drift in the profound relaxation. Feel the connection to your partner as you float together in a warm pool of your conjoined energy, swirling around in the comfort of satisfied love. Feel good.
Exercise. Get loud. Why have you never heard your neighbors having sex? Why have they never heard you? Do you believe that your partner should make a lot of noise, but you shouldn't? Why is that? Masturbate as loud as you can. Pump your hips to the rhythm of your breath. Open your mouth and throat as wide as you can. Breathe hard. Moan. Yell. Scream. See how much noise you and your partner can make the next time you make love. Smile when you see your neighbors.
Chapter 22. Public sex, group sex, and orgies. Do you want to be an orgy slut? This is a choice. No matter what you might have heard, group sex is not obligatory for open relationships. And we know many fine, outrageous sluts who don't attend orgies or promote three-ways or four-ways in their homes. We also know monogamous couples who frequent public sex environments for the sheer pleasure of playing with each other in a special and sexy place, complete with an appreciative audience. If you have ever had a fantasy of being made love to by five people, or having an extra pair of hands to make love with, or having lots of hot people to get impulsive with right now, or performing before an audience that will thrill to your thrashing and screaming in delight. In other words, if you are attracted to the idea of sex parties, this chapter is for you. Here we will tell you what you need to know to have a good time and deal with any difficulties that might come up. We believe that it is a fundamentally radical political act to deprivatize sex. So much oppression in our culture is based on shame about sex, the oppression of women, cultural minorities, and sexual minorities. All these kinds of oppression are instituted in the name of the, presumably asexual, family. We are all oppressed. We have all been taught one way or another that our desires, our bodies, our sexualities are shameful. What better way to defeat oppression than to get together in communities and celebrate the wonders of sex? Going to a sex party presents an exciting challenge. It's an opportunity to stretch and grow as you deal with stage fright, performance anxiety, and the wonderful and scary tension of planning and getting ready for elaborate sex in an intensely sexual environment. Everyone is nervous, and the shared vulnerability adds to the arousal. We love the giddy feeling of conquest when we succeed in overcoming all these obstacles and creating a hot sexual encounter. There's not a lot of room for prudery and shame at an orgy, and when we play in a group of people, we get powerful reinforcement that sex is good and beautiful and that we are hot and sexy people. Why public sex? Your authors both enjoy public sex and regularly attend what we call play parties, environments in which people gather to enjoy a wide variety of sex with each other. In a highly charged sexual atmosphere, we feel a synergistic kind of arousal when everybody else's excitement feeds our own. And we feel connected to and turned on by all this happy sex that is going on around us. Group sex offers the chance to try out new partners in a safe environment surrounded by our friends. We even get the opportunity to check out a person we might be turned on to while they make love with someone else, an audition or advertising, depending on your point of view. Group sex offers the opportunity to challenge ourselves, move our sexuality out into the open, banners flying, with lots of support in getting past the fears and bashfulness, and lots of friendly people to applaud your ecstasies. In a group sex environment, we can learn new sex acts with lots of support. We can watch someone else actually doing a form of sex that we had previously only seen in our fantasies, and we can ask them, when they're through, how they do that. We learned many of our safer sex skills at orgies, where rubber barriers are de rigueur, and there is plenty of support for dealing with awkward bits of latex and maintaining everybody's safety and well-being. Most public sex spaces provide condoms, rubber gloves, and whatever else you may need to play safe. Play parties can help you get over bad body image. As we have pointed out before, people enjoy sex at all ages and in all kinds of bodies, and at an orgy you will see them doing it. One good way to prepare for your first adventure at an orgy is to visit a nude beach or hot spring, if you have never before, to see what real people look like without clothes and to experience being naked in public yourself. You'll start to see beauty in a lot of bodies that don't look anything like the ones in Playboy or Playgirl. This may be a good time to repeat the airport game exercise you learned in Chapter 17, Making Connection. And there's a lot of sensual delight to the feeling of warm sun and gentle breezes on all the parts of your body. It is amazing to us to think, after many years of practicing sex in public, that most people in our culture have never had a chance to watch another person enjoy sex. We worry about them. It seems like a terrible deprivation. We remember what it was like when we wondered and worried about whether we looked foolish with our legs up in the air and our faces screwed up in an ecstatic scream. Group sex is a great antidote to bad body image. You will feel much better about how you look, how you perform, and who you are when you have a chance to see real people having real sex. Look around you. Every single person is gorgeous when they come. Which is why the orgy can be a perfect stage for the consensual exhibitionist. At the sex party, we all get to be stars and shine our brightest. Party spaces. Sex clubs are very special environments. San Francisco, where we live, has a delightfully wide choice of orgiastic environments to choose from. There are party spaces for women only, men only, couples, SM enthusiasts, and lovers of drag and costumery, and parties that specialize in just about every sexual practice you can think of, and some that have to be seen to be believed. You may want to check out the website for cuddle parties for some new ideas about getting together and perhaps a safer introduction to connecting in groups. At cuddle parties, everyone wears pajamas and snuggles to explore intense closeness without taking it on into actual sex. Parties may be openly advertised to the public, advertised only in newsletters or at support groups, or private and by invitation only. There are public clubs like the Gay Men's Baths that are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and smaller spaces, perhaps an adapted basement recreation room, whose owners host parties once or twice a month. Other congenial groups sponsor small private gatherings in their members' living rooms. San Francisco and many other major cities boast a fair number of party houses, where one or two stories of a building have been dedicated to social areas and playrooms for partying. Party houses may rent space to private groups, who might host a party once a month or so for their particular guest list. The first group sex parties that Dossie attended were held in a communal flat in San Francisco under the presiding genius of Betty Dodson. Those who lived there were all dedicated to feminism, gay liberation, and sexual liberation, and their commune was a conscious experiment to radically change the conditions in which we can enjoy sex. They took out all the doors and made the loft space upstairs into one unbroken room by getting rid of the furniture. On a typical day, you could find several people on the deck sunbathing nude, some others organizing dinner, two more playing chess, a couple fucking, and another person across the room vibrating her way to her own orgasm. There were larger parties 3 or 4 times a year, full of people making love in groups, in twos, or singly, with lots of massage and tantric practitioners chanting om in tune with the ever-present hum of vibrators. This space and what happened in it were private, available to the friends and lovers of the 6 or 7 people who lived there. Public sex environments, whether they're large public clubs or small party houses, have the common function of providing an agreeable space in which you can be sexual. Although the decor and furnishings of group sex environments vary as widely as the human sexual imagination, there are basics that you will find in most party spaces. There will be a door person to check you in, and you may be asked to sign a waiver of liability. There will be a social area with places to sit and talk and meet people, usually with a small buffet of snacks and beverages. Sex does not usually take place in the social area, so if you're feeling shy, you can hang out there till you work up your courage. There will be lockers or coat racks or shelves or some place to put your street clothes, then either change into party costume or simply disrobe. Some parties are mostly naked. Others feature a dazzling array of costumes for every sexual fantasy. There will be provisions for cleanliness, including bathrooms and showers. Then there will be the playroom or rooms. Playrooms vary from tiny cubicles, often set up in mazes, with a small bed just big enough to fuck on, to large rooms with mirrored walls and upholstered floors for puppy piles, group gropes, and other orgiastic activities. There may be hot tubs, steam rooms, and gardens for you to cruise and relax in. There may be an area for dancing. There is almost always music with a very strong beat to wake up your natural rhythm and to give a sense of oral privacy so you won't be distracted by your neighbor's heavy breathing or squeals of delight. The lights will be low, and often red or orange, so we can all look a little tan and perhaps a little sexier. There may be rooms with furniture imaginatively designed to have sex on, like medical examining tables or slings, mirrored beds or dungeons for SM fantasies, or perhaps a giant waterbed for those who like to make waves. In recent years, hotels that host conferences for various groups celebrating their lifestyles have been allowing party spaces, even dungeons, to be built in their ballrooms for the guests to enjoy. These parties are run by the conference and usually staffed by helpful conference volunteers, with cooperation from the hotel staff to keep the space private. Hotels tend to like our conferences. We don't drink too much, we are polite to the staff, and we wear great outfits. Talk about the radical political act of deprivatizing sex. Major hotel chains now have policies about play parties. Policies that support us. Yay! Play party spaces tend to form communities. People try out the various parties in their area and usually return to one or two groups that they find congenial. As people get to know each other and share the special intimacy of sexual connection, they often become friends and form extended families. It is not unusual at all to find a sex party club hosting a benefit for a member who has had an accident or a major illness. These are communities, and communities take care of their own. Group sex etiquette. We know they didn't teach you in school how to behave at an orgy, and we bet your mother didn't teach you either. There is a particular etiquette needed for public sex environments, since everyone in them has let down some of their customary boundaries in order to get closer to each other. Social boundaries usually serve the purpose of keeping people at a predictable distance, so we all feel safe in our own personal space. Group sex poses the challenge of figuring out how to feel safe and comfortable while getting up close and very intimate with a whole bunch of presumably nice, sexy people. So new boundaries must be developed, learned, and respected so that everyone can feel safe enough to play. Many party houses show you a list of rules as you come in or post them on the wall. Read them. They will make sense. Most places specify the level of safer sex precautions they require and provide condoms, rubber gloves, lubricants, dental dams, and so on. Even if you and your partner are fluid bonded, you may be asked or feel it is polite to use latex barriers in a public environment. Ethical sluts obey the rules of the parties they choose to attend. Responsibility and voyeurism is a must. You may watch what people do in public places, but always from a respectful distance. If the participants are aware of your presence, you are too close. Whether or not it is okay to masturbate while watching varies from place to place, but it's always polite to keep your own excitement discreet enough that you don't distract the good folks who are putting on such a nice show. They are probably not doing it for you anyway. Also be aware that when you are close to people who are playing, they can hear you. This is not an appropriate place to tell your friend all about how awful your boss is or about your recent experiences at the proctologist. The boundary between social talk space and play space is very important. When you enter play space, you enter into a different state of consciousness that tends to get you out of your intellect and into your body very quickly. Too much talking in play space can yank you back into everyday verbal, non-sexual awareness. Cruising is active but must not be intrusive. Ideally, a respectful request receives a respectful response, which means it's okay to ask, and if the answer is no thank you, that is okay too. Remember, people who come to orgies are pretty sophisticated and they are here because they know what they want. If that person you found attractive doesn't want to play with you right now, take it easy and find someone else. Pestering anyone at a sex party is unspeakably rude and will quickly earn you an invitation to the outside world. Cruising at sex parties is not that different from elsewhere, although perhaps more honest and to the point. Usually you start with introducing yourself as a person. Hi, I'm Dick. What's your name? Is way preferable to, hi, do you like my big dick? People will talk for a bit, flirt a little, and then ask quite directly, would you like to play with me? When the answer is yes, negotiation follows. What do you like to do? Is there anything you don't like? Let's check that we both mean the same thing by safer sex. And, by the way, I have this fantasy. Nonverbal communication. Body language also can work, as long as you are willing to be relaxed about any misunderstandings that may arise. We believe that it is important to learn how to put what you want into words so you have an option for absolutely clear communication. Then you can pursue nonverbal cruising if you like, knowing your good communication skills will back you up if you need them. Body language is about catching someone's eye, exchanging a smile, moving your body closer, always checking the response. If you catch someone's eye and they turn away, well, there's your answer. Don't take it personally. Maybe they have another commitment. Maybe they're just not in the mood. People have as many reasons for not wanting to play as they do for wanting to play. If you move into someone's personal space and they move closer, there's another answer. It helps to initiate touch on a relatively neutral part of the body, a shoulder, a hand. And again, does the person move away or closer? If they freeze, it's probably a good idea to communicate with words. Gender differences. We live in a society where people learn some pretty warped ideas about sex. Women learn that they are not supposed to be sexual without falling in love. Men learn that sex is a commodity that you get from a woman. Men may even learn that women themselves are commodities. Group sex only works when everybody is acknowledged as a person. Nobody likes being treated like a thing. To avoid such problems, most group sex environments that include both men and women restrict the number of single men who are invited or insist that no man is welcome without a female escort. These requirements are a sad last resort for dealing with an unpleasant reality, and we quite agree that it is unfair that men of goodwill will get penalized for the intrusive behavior of men who evidently don't know any better. But that's how it is, and the only way we are going to change it is to work on our own behavior and teach our brothers and sisters what we learn. Pansexual environments that make a point of including a variety of people, gay, straight, bi, transgendered, tend to inspire more respect for all. And in such environments, we get to learn from a lot of people whose lives and sexualities may be different from our own. Cruising is different by gender, and those differences become very visible when you compare gay men's environments to lesbian orgies and see how they are similar to and different from hetero or bisexual groups. Gay men seem to feel safer with anonymous sex, and gay male cruising at baths and clubs is often nonverbal. One man might catch another's eye, smile, walk across the room, touch a shoulder, and then embrace, with little or no verbal communication. Lesbians are often more cautious and tend to talk for a while before moving into the playroom and getting down. Women in all group sex environments tend to be less open than men to anonymous sex and to prefer some communication and personal connection first. When a woman seeks to realize a fantasy of anonymous sex with a number of people, often one of her friends or lovers will act as MC, doing traffic control and whispering into a stranger's ear, "She doesn't like anything that tickles," or "I think she'd like it if you fucked harder." The MC takes the responsibility for safety and limit setting so the star can feel utterly free. This respect for caution is probably because women have had serious reasons to feel less than safe around sex with strangers and need some support to feel safe enough to let down their guard. There are no rights or wrongs to this situation, or what wrong there is exists in our history, which we can't very well change. What is important is that everyone, male, female, or transgendered, straight, bi, or gay, has a right to feel safe in order to get free to enjoy sex. Establishing consent. Consent is an absolute requirement. Naive people sometimes assume that when two or three or four people are already having sex, it is okay to just join in and start fondling somebody. Well, it isn't. Because you didn't ask, and because you don't know what these people want or what their limits are. So you might do the wrong thing, and the people you try to join will have to stop whatever they are having so much fun doing to deal with you, and they will be justifiably angry at you. How are you going to get consent from people in the middle of a hot fuck? Tap them on the shoulder and say, "Will you please stop a moment so I can ask if I can join you?" There is just about no way to join a sexual scene that has already started unless you are already lovers with all the people involved, and even then you should be careful. When we wonder if it's okay to join friends of ours who have already begun to play, we usually watch from a respectful distance till somebody catches our eye and either beckons us over or doesn't. Respect for boundaries, as we have said before, is mandatory if everyone is going to feel safe enough to play freely and without constraint. Don't be the person who makes the environment unsafe. If you are playing at a party and someone invades your space, you are quite right to tell that person to move away. It is also appropriate to let your host know about intrusive people and pushy come-ons. Party hosts develop skills to talk with people about appropriate behavior and explain why the etiquette is as it is, and if the person will not learn, the host has the power to remove that person from the guest list. Watch your expectations. Most people approach their first group sex party in a mental maelstrom of fears, fantasies, and wild expectations about what might, or worse yet, might not happen. We strongly recommend that you get a grip on yourself. Acknowledge that you actually don't know what is going to happen, and go to the party with the expectation that you will be proud of yourself if you manage to walk in the door. If you stay for an hour and watch, you get a gold star. If you manage to introduce yourself to someone and hold a conversation, give yourself a medal of honor. Going to an orgy is very challenging. Expect to be nervous. Expect to worry. Expect a fashion crisis and allow at least 2 hours to get dressed. Helpful hint. Build your outfit from fabrics that feel sensual, silk, leather, latex, so you feel sensuous too. Avoid fragile antiques or pricey designer clothes if you want to fuck in them. Dress to feel hot, look good, and be comfortable. It's bad enough to have your stomach churning. You don't need your shoes pinching. Many parties specify when doors are open and when they're closed, because otherwise all these nervous people will arrive late after spending hours working up their courage and their outfits, and the party hosts will never get any time to play. If this is your first party, take it easy on yourself. Promise yourself and each other that you will leave if either one of you gets too uncomfortable. Establish a signal, perhaps a hand on the elbow, to let your partner know that you need a private place to talk or that you need support. Use another signal. Janet uses Calgon from the old TV commercials that said, "Calgon, take me away," to communicate to your partner that you'd like to leave soon, with the understanding that a partner who's happily cruising or flirting or fooling around may need some time to wrap up whatever's going on so that you can leave. Go with the goal of making a few acquaintances and getting familiar with the scene and your reactions to it. If you do get inspired to play and find someone who wants to play with you, that's fine. And if you don't, that's fine too. Just walking into a play environment for the first time requires a lot of courage, so be proud of yourself. Always remember that this is your first party, potentially the first of many. You don't need to accomplish a lifetime of fantasies tonight. You have the rest of your life to do that. You just need to take your first steps. Couples at the orgy. Deal with your relationship before you go to the party. This is important. Are you going as a couple to show off your incredible sexiness? Are you cruising for thirds and fourths? Or are you going as two separate individuals to meet people and share sex with them? If one of you connects with a hot number, is the other welcome to join in? Do you need your partner's agreement before you play with anyone? If you need to pause in a flirtation to check in with your partner, experienced sluts will admire your thoughtfulness and integrity. Are you committed to going home together? Or is it okay for one or the other of you to sleep out? And if both want to, what about the babysitter? The reason you decide all this in advance is that it is way too ugly to have a disagreement about this sort of thing in public, where if you do disagree, you are likely to feel embarrassed and angry and make a big unhappy mess. Two friends of ours got locked in a disagreement about going to sex parties. They both wanted to go, but one wanted to go and play with the other, and the other wanted to play the field. What to do? Well, there are parties at least once a month around here, so they decided to go 1 month as a couple to do things together, and the next to support each other in separate cruising. We like to watch couples make love with each other at parties. You can see the intimacy and how well they know each other's ways. how beautifully they fit together, how exquisitely orchestrated lovemaking can become with years of practice. We like it as a fine experience for the voyeur, and because we can learn a lot from watching people who are experts on each other. We like to point out that showing off your wondrous beauty together is excellent advertising for the next time when you come to the party ready to welcome new partners. Play parties can also offer you the opportunity to process fears and jealousies about your partner. How does it feel to watch your partner make love with another person? Is it really awful? You might be surprised to find yourself feeling pretty neutral, like, gee, I thought that would bother me, but actually it doesn't. You might like the chance to observe your lover, how powerful she looks when she thrusts, how sweet he looks when he comes. It might even turn you on. There is definitely arousal to be found in taking risks. Some couples find that group sex can rev up their sex life at home by providing a lot of stimulus, new ideas to try out, and the motivation and energy to make their home life as hot as an orgy. Buttons and biases. Expect to get your buttons pushed. Expect to discover your biases. At a group sex party, you will share unprecedented intimacy with a bunch of strangers, and sometimes that will be difficult. You might start into a three-way with your girlfriend and another man, which seems like a hot idea but might turn out to push some buttons. Yeah, we know. You set out to both make love to her, but there you are, with this man, being sexual and probably in physical contact, and how does that feel? We like to attend pansexual group sex parties, which means that attendees may identify as gay or lesbian or bisexual or hetero or transgendered, but are generally comfortable and happy to play side by side with people whose desires and identities may be entirely different from their own. We are always running into issues about the unfamiliar. The lesbian who has never been naked in the presence of men, the gay man who fears judgment from women or violence from straight men, the transgendered woman who gets to wonder if that person who is so attracted to her knows what she's got under her skirt, and does she care? And if she cares, what is she going to do? Whatever your prejudices are, the people at this party are too old, too young, too male, too female, too queer, too straight, too fat, too thin, too white, too ethnic, whatever. It is really good for you to learn to get bigger than your biases. Sexy, too. Everything embarrassing you never thought of doing in public. In our fantasies, we all come together as smoothly as Fred and Ginger, carried away by the music on a rising tide of passion. And sometimes it will be like that. But you probably will need to practice first, just like Fred and Ginger. Your erection might refuse to cooperate as you near the moment of truth, especially when you suddenly remember you need to put a condom on it. Orgasm might be more difficult to focus on in a noisy environment with an unfamiliar partner. What if you set out to play with someone and you can't find your turn-on? If you find yourself internally panicking, we encourage you to breathe. Slow down. Remember that you are not in a race and you are not in a hurry. This is not the Olympics. You have nothing to prove. You and your new friend are setting out to do things that feel good with your bodies. Touch feels good. Stroking feels good. Taking time feels good. Slow down enough so that you can truly feel what you are doing. Worrying about the future will not help you get there. Focus on what you are feeling in the present. Erections and orgasms might come, might go, but you can never go wrong by doing what feels good. The noise and hectic energy of a party can lead people to rush, when slowing down is the best way to connect with your turn-on. People don't get turned on by magic, at least not very often, or very reliably. And different people are turned on in very different ways. A very important kind of self-knowledge will come in handy at these times. Know what turns you on. Whether it's biting on the neck or sucking on the backs of knees, when you know what gets your juices flowing, you can ask for it. and then your play partner will know what turns you on and feel freer to tell you what turns her on. And before you know it, there you all are, completely turned on and floating down the river of unbridled lust. We'll end this chapter.